day, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for your patience. You've joined the Zag Incorporated First Quarter Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. Should you require any additional assistance during the call, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference may be recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Kim Rogers, with Genesis Select, the investor relations firm for Zag Incorporated. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Latif. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us today for the Zag Inc. First Quarter 2013 conference call. On the call today from the company are Randy Hales, President and Chief Executive Officer, along with Zag's Chief Financial Officer, Brandon O'Brien. By now, everyone should have access to the first quarter earnings press release. If you have not received a copy of the release, it can be found on the investor relations portion of the Zag website. This call is being recorded, and a podcast of the conference call will also be archived on the Zag investor relations webpage under events for 1 year. Before we begin, we'd like to remind everyone that the prepared remarks contain certain forward-looking statements, and management may make additional forward-looking statements in response to your questions. These statements include, but are not limited to, our outlook for the company and statements that estimate or project future results of operations or the performance of the company. These statements do not guarantee future performance and speak only as of the date hereof. We refer all of you to the risk factors contained in Zag's annual report on Form 10-K and quarterly reports on Form 10-Q filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission for a more detailed discussion on the factors that can cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in any forward-looking statements. Zag assumes no obligation to revise any forward-looking statements that may be made in today's release or call. Please note that on today's call, in addition to discussing GAAP financial results and the outlook for the company, the following pro forma financial measures will be discussed: adjusted EBITDA and pro forma net income attributable to shareholders. An explanation of Zag's use of these non-GAAP financial numbers in this call and the reconciliation between GAAP and non-GAAP measures required by SEC Regulation G is included in Zag's press release today, which again can be found on the investor relations section of the company's website. The non-GAAP information is not a substitute for any performance measures derived in accordance with GAAP, and the use of such non-GAAP measures has limitations, which are detailed in the company's press release. And with that, I'd now like to turn the call over to Randy Hales. Randy?
Thank you, Kim. Thank you for joining us on the call today. As I'm sure you can imagine, I would have much preferred to be releasing very different results for the first quarter in my new role. When I accepted the CEO position at Zag, I was empowered by the board to make the necessary changes to build a stronger company and increase shareholder value over the long term. It became apparent in the first quarter that there were some important changes that needed to be made at the company. While the pain associated with the consequences of these changes in the near term is not pleasant, the long-term promise of a company with a stronger foundation for growth and shareholder return is what we are building towards. I will explain some of these changes that we have made in more detail as I go through my remarks. First of all, it should come as no surprise that the revenue for the quarter at $51.5 million fell short of our internal goal, causing us to experience a year-over-year decline in first quarter revenues. The quarter was influenced by a few unique events that negatively affected both our top line and gross margin. During the quarter, we consolidated our account management team and transitioned from a brand to customer focus. During this transition, we missed sales opportunities with regard to the iFrogs audio line. Secondly, we made a decision to change our distribution strategy. We've discussed on previous calls that as part of our targeted global distribution objective, we would align ourselves with a limited number of key distributors in an effort to better manage channel pricing. As a result, this has caused us to end our relationship with some of our distributors who we did not believe were aligned with our pricing strategy. As a reminder, for those of you who may be new to Zag, our products were being steeply discounted by certain distributors through various channels, causing large retail price discrepancies throughout our distribution network. This caused significant concern for key customers already aligned with our pricing strategy. Consequently, we have established relationships with three new master distributors. The new master distributors' contracts support our pricing initiatives and prevent the discounting we've experienced in the past. We have now discontinued all shipments to our former distributors, and we anticipate the residual inventory will work itself through the system later this year. Another contributor to our revenue shortfall was lost opportunity associated with two of the products we launched late last year, our 9-inch mini keyboard and the Invisible Shield Extreme. Despite great product reviews, the 9-inch keyboard turned out to be a retail disappointment as it became clear that consumers prefer keyboards that match the smaller form factor of the iPad mini as opposed to our larger 9-inch keyboard. The 9-inch keyboard case was also very tight-fitting and made it cumbersome for consumers to install and remove their iPads. Ultimately, this product did not meet the market acceptance we had originally forecast. Consequently, in addition to the lower sales volume, we recorded an inventory reserve for excess inventory, which negatively impacted our gross margin. The second product setback for us during the quarter was the Invisible Shield Extreme, which performed as advertised but was subject to a very long cure period in which tiny air bubbles remained trapped between the Invisible Shield Extreme and the phone display for several days after installation. Due to the customer concerns with the slow cure process caused during the installation, we lost sales opportunities. The last significant contributor to the revenue shortfall was a strategic decision made during the quarter to streamline operations and consolidate selling and administrative functions between Zag and iFrogs, including the consolidation of our account management team. This included a shift from account managers being primarily brand-focused to being customer-focused. That is, a customer now has a single point of contact for both brands. As a result of this transition during the quarter, we saw lower than expected sales in product lines with which our account managers were not initially familiar. The company is undergoing extensive cross-training to ensure that all account managers are proficient at selling products under both brands. Now moving on to gross margin for the quarter. Coming in at 36.9%, our gross margin was several points below our internal target and was primarily impacted by the following activities. Number one, our continued shift in product mix as sales of Invisible Shield products, our highest margin product category, decreased as a percentage of overall sales compared to the first quarter of 2012. Number two, an increase of our inventory reserve related to the excess inventory. Number three, excess air freight charges. All of these factors had the effect of compressing our gross margin during the quarter. Due to the circumstances surrounding our revenue and EBITDA shortfalls in the first quarter, as well as some industry issues that will affect our business, we are adjusting our fiscal 13 guidance down for the remainder of the year. The most significant change in guidance is due to Apple delaying new device launches until later this year. We have benefited over the last several years from numerous Apple device launches spread throughout the year, which we won't see this year. We are also experiencing a slower onboarding process with our new master distributors and longer closing cycles with some of our targeted new distribution. On the international front, we are facing increasing economic difficulties in Europe as we strive to expand our retail footprint there. As a result of these factors, we are lowering our fiscal 13 revenue guidance by $39 million to a range of $274 million to $280 million, or approximately a 12% revenue guidance reduction for the year. We are also lowering our EBITDA guidance to a range of $53 million to $55 million and resetting gross margin expectations for the remainder of the year to the low 40s. I'm now going to shift my remarks for a few minutes to discuss those reasons why we remain encouraged by Zag's current opportunities in the mobile computing industry. I believe our sales decline is relatively short-lived and that we are building a strong foundation based on continued product diversification, stronger distribution partners, and better operating performance. As a result of our distribution change to three master distributors, we are already experiencing improved pricing management across all of our channels of distribution. We also believe that our new master distributors will play a significant role in our ability to open up new distribution in travel, specialty retail, wholesale clubs, outdoor recreation, education, government, and international. From a new product perspective, we are a company that is constantly pushing the envelope to introduce these new creative product solutions. As our product management discipline continues to mature, we are getting better at launching new products and gaining insights that will help us to avoid the product problems we experienced in the recent quarter. We remain committed to introducing new products that will surpass expectations and set new industry standards. For example, the Invisible Shield Extreme will be relaunched next month with a new formulation that cures rapidly while providing the highest level of device protection. Fortunately, our retail partners are eager to stock this product when it becomes available. Another example is the next generation of our mobile keyboard line, which has been completely redesigned and will offer features not previously available in tablet keyboards. I've been using an early production version of our new keyboard with my iPad mini for several weeks, and it is by far the best keyboard from both a design and functionality perspective that Zag has ever built. We will be launching these keyboards near the end of the second quarter, and I'm confident they will become the new standard in the industry. Another promising upside opportunity for us this year is our mobile gaming platform, where we expect to launch the Caliber Advantage online at the end of the second quarter and in retail during the third quarter. We have been working diligently to bring both retail and software development companies together to support this launch. At present, we have over 28 gaming titles that are committed to support our online launch. Although this is a more complicated product launch than we have ever undertaken, we are excited by our progress and by the response from the industry. While Apple's products have played a large role in our growth, Samsung continues to strengthen and challenge Apple's multi-year dominance in mobile computing. I'd like to address what effect this dynamic has on our flagship product, the Invisible Shield. During the first quarter of 2013, our market research showed that the Invisible Shield was tracking in near unison with the top-selling smartphones and tablets. The increasing popularity of Samsung's mobile computing products is favorable to Zag, and we have experienced significant growth in sales of our Samsung-related products. Until recently, the Android platform was extremely fragmented, but now with Samsung emerging as a category leader, we expect our Samsung-related sales to continue to increase. We are often asked about attach rates for the Invisible Shield. Because each of our retailers has a different strategy for selling the Invisible Shield, their attach rates vary widely, and we don't get consistent data on this metric, which we can accurately track and report. Therefore, we measure our success for the category on a real dollar basis and look for this category to produce high single-digit growth in 2013. We recently updated and strengthened our long-term supply agreement with our film partner and are working together to further differentiate the Invisible Shield from the competition by introducing creative product solutions that will allow us to remain the market leader. Several of you have asked us about technological advances in glass that would put our Invisible Shield business at risk. Fortunately, to our knowledge, there is not a current solution or anything on the horizon that would lessen the need for consumers to protect their device screens from scratching and breaking. Zag continues to strengthen as a brand that builds great products and stands proudly behind them. Next week, we will be recognized as one of the top suppliers in 2012 and the first ever mobile accessory supplier by one of our largest customers. In addition, we were recently named co-captains for mobile accessories at another one of our large retail customers. We are pushing the envelope on new technologies and taking calculated risks with our new product initiatives. I'm confident that our new product efforts will be rewarded by growth in our existing distribution, as well as opening up entirely new doors for our products to be sold through. With regard to improving gross margin, I've had the opportunity to work closely with our operations team to establish several new disciplines in supply chain, inventory management, and logistics. Air freight has been one of those expenses that we have been trying to minimize. To bring greater visibility and control to this large expense, we recently modified our air freight policy to require several additional levels of internal sign-off, as well as my personal review, in order to drive more visibility and accountability through the organization. We continue to refine our inventory management processes to ensure we maintain proper inventory levels to meet forecasted demand. Clearly, we have our work cut out for us, but the organization is quickly aligning to support our product, brand, and distribution initiatives. Throughout the remainder of 2013, an important area of focus for me will be supporting and strengthening both the Zag sales and product management teams. As an organization, we continue to lead with product to both build the Zag and iFrogs brands and extend our distribution. Due to the hard work and focused effort of our product teams, our new product pipeline is more robust than ever. We have a solid balance sheet and sufficient access to capital to grow our business. We are improving our financial management disciplines and operating efficiencies while constantly adapting to the rapidly changing consumer electronics industry. We are fortunate to have new leadership at the executive and board level with many years of successful consumer products experience. Our board governance has never been stronger, and the company as a whole has gone through a significant maturation process in recent months. As we disclosed in an 8-K filed last Monday, Ed Ekstrom resigned from our board of directors. In August 2012, when the company adopted a policy prohibiting short-term or speculative stock transactions, Ed maintained a margin loan on a portion of his Zag shares and was granted time to come into compliance with the policy. However, Ed recently communicated to us that his full-time commitments had increased significantly, so Ed chose not to seek a waiver of the company's policy in advance of the filing of our 2013 proxy statement, but rather to resign from the board. We are grateful for Ed's service and wish him well in his future endeavors. At Zag, we are establishing a culture of empowerment and accountability. There's more attention and focus on planning and execution than ever before. All of these themes combine to give me great confidence in the future of Zag. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Brandon for a detailed discussion of the financial results. Brandon?
Thank you, Randy, and thank you for joining us today to review our first quarter 2013 financial results. As stated in today's release, we will be disclosing consolidated financial results reflecting our primary operations within the United States, as well as our international operations from Zag International, our wholly owned subsidiary operating out of Shannon, Ireland. On the call today, I will speak only to consolidated results unless otherwise stated. The financial statements provided in today's release reflect consolidated Q1 2013 financial details, so you may refer to them for further clarifications. Revenue for the quarter was $51.5 million versus $55.5 million in the quarter from the prior year, representing year-over-year decline of 7.2%. During the first quarter of 2013, management consolidated a number of Zag iFrogs processes and functions, closed the iFrogs office in Logan, Utah, and downsized the number of iFrogs employees. The two offices consolidated marketing, product development, product management, customer service, sales, accounting, and IT. This change and other factors led management to reassess its reportable operating segments during the quarter, and we ultimately concluded that the company should be a single reportable operating segment. The breakdown for the sources of revenue are as follows. For the quarter, 83% of sales came from our retail channel versus 82% in the same period last year. 12% of sales were from Zag.com and iFrogs.com versus 13% in the same quarter last year, and 5% from the kiosk and standalone stores versus 5% in the same quarter last year. International sales accounted for 10% of total revenue in the quarter versus 11% in the same quarter last year. We continue to see diversification in our product revenues, with 44% of revenues coming from the Invisible Shield product line versus 48% in the same quarter of last year, and 32% coming from our keyboard product line versus 21% in the same quarter of last year. Gross profit for the quarter was $19 million versus $26.9 million in the same quarter of last year, which translates into gross margins for the quarter of 37% versus 49% for the prior year period. The decrease in gross profit percentage is due to a number of factors, including the continued product mix shift as sales of our Invisible Shield products, our highest margin product category, decreased as a percentage of overall sales compared to the first quarter of 2012. As noted, sales of our keyboard products increased from 21% of total net sales to 32% over the same period. We also had increases in our reserve related to excess and slow-moving inventory and higher-than-expected air freight charges incurred during the period. Operating income in the quarter was $2 million versus $10.2 million in the same period last year. Operating margins for the quarter were 3.9% compared to 18.4% for the same period last year. We also incurred $1 million in stock compensation expense during the quarter, compared to $1.3 million in the same quarter of last year. The effective tax rate for the quarter was 24%, compared to 36.9% for the same period last year. The tax rate in the quarter was affected by R&D tax credits that had a disproportionate effect on the rate due to the smaller pre-tax net income. We anticipate our tax rate for the remainder of the year to average closer to 38%. Net income in the quarter came in at $900,000 versus $5.1 million in the same quarter in the prior year. Our fully diluted share count for the quarter was 31.7 million shares. At March 31st, 2013, we had 0.6 million outstanding options, 0.4 million outstanding warrants, and 0.6 million outstanding restricted stock grants. We use the treasury method in calculating our diluted shares outstanding. Our fully diluted earnings per share were 3 cents for the quarter versus 16 cents in the same period last year. During the first quarter, we executed under our stock repurchase plan and purchased 796,764 shares of common stock at an average price of $7.50 per share for a total expenditure under the repurchase plan of $6 million, leaving $4 million left under the repurchase plan authorized by our board of directors. During the first quarter, we incurred the following non-cash charges, which we have tax affected in the calculation of pro forma EPS, assuming a statutory rate of 38.25%. First, $1 million, or 2 cents, related to stock-based compensation. Second, $2.4 million, or 5 cents, related to amortization of intangible assets. And third, $0.6 million, or 2 cents, related to our equity method investment in HZO. These losses are not tax-deductible, so the loss has not been tax-affected. Total non-cash charges included in the calculation of pro forma net income totaled $4.1 million in the quarter, or 8 cents per diluted share. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter came in at $6.1 million compared to $14.4 million for the first quarter of 2012. Turning to the balance sheet, working capital at the end of the quarter was $82 million compared to working capital of $89.4 million at December 31, 2012. We reported a cash balance of $23.4 million. For the first quarter, we generated cash from operations of over $14 million. The balance on the line of credit at March 31st, 2013 was $17.7 million, and the term loan balance was $24 million. Accounts receivable for the quarter were $35.5 million as compared to $54.6 million at December 31st, 2012. DSOs in the quarter were 62 compared to 57 for the quarter ended December 31st, 2012. We continue to be very comfortable with the quality of our accounts receivable. Inventories for the quarter were $41.3 million compared to $40 million at December 31st, 2012. We continue to evaluate inventory on a monthly basis and reserve against excess and slow-moving inventory as needed. We are satisfied with the progress that HZO is seeing with the execution of contracts and the further development of their business plan. It is likely that HZO will raise additional funds to execute on their business strategy with the OEMs, and at this point, we have not participated in any additional rounds of financing as we are focusing on our business plan here at Zag. At March 31st, 2013, our ownership percentage in HZO was 30%. With that, I'd like to turn the call back over to Randy.
Thanks, Brandon. I want to reiterate that you have the commitment of the entire ZAG organization, that we will continue to focus on advancing our growth initiatives to execute effectively and deliver results. We remain optimistic about our future, and we believe that ZAG will continue to ascend as a leader in mobile computing accessories. With that, operator, we are ready to begin the question and answer session.
My pleasure, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, please press the pound key. Again, to ask a question, press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. That's star 1 on your touchtone telephone to ask a question. Our first question comes from Dave King of Roth Capital Partners. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, guys.
Hey, Dave.
I guess first off, when you in the transition to new distributors, is it fair to assume that most of the impact we saw this quarter was on the Invisible Shield side, since that was kind of the business, I guess, that looked like it was down a little over, you know, double-digit pace in the first quarter, or did that impact keyboards, et cetera, everything?
Yeah, Dave. So the distributors were full-line distributors. They had access to all of our various products, not just the Invisible Shield.
Okay, so then, I mean, I guess when I look at the Invisible Shield, and maybe ask the question a little bit differently, as I look at the Invisible Shield revenues being down as much as they were, if I, you know, the three things that you guys kind of broke out in terms of distribution, also the Extreme, you know, I guess how should we think about what was the biggest impact there in terms of what drove that?
Yeah, so, Dave, a couple of things. First of all, we haven't lost any peg space with the Invisible Shield, so our business it still looks good from that perspective. But we also didn't build for a device launch and have any sell-in in this quarter like we experienced same quarter last year. And obviously that had an impact on the Invisible Shield sales.
Okay, fair enough. And then, Brandon, I may have missed it because I jumped on late. Did you talk about Best Buy as a percentage of revenues? Do you have that number?
I do. So Best Buy as a percentage of revenues for the quarter was 30%, and then Walmart came in at 12%.
Okay, thank you. And then last one, I would say, for now, and then I'll step back. Gross margin impact, obviously I get the mix issue. Can maybe just, do you have the number in terms of either dollars or basis points, what impact the inventory reserve, you know, for excess inventory, et cetera, and then the air freight charges, what impact those might have each had on the quarter?
Yeah, the biggest one was the mix shift by far, but you did have air freight, the charges related to inventory were about $1 million in the quarter related to, you know, the 9-inch keyboards and some excess inventory that we had.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Maloof of Craig-Hallum Capital. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks, guys, for taking my question. Since we have, like, basically 30% of the sales at Best Buy, you know, sort of a good microcosm of what's going on because they handle so many of your products, can you give us a sense of what the attach rates or what the sales are of Invisible Shield within that channel, just to give us a sense of how, at least on an apples-to-apples basis, things are going?
Yeah, Mike, it's a difficult one for us to get our arms around because we don't get reliable or good data from them. The thing I can tell you about Best Buy is that they have been in the installation business longer than anybody else. They've also been in the product longer than anybody else, so they tend to drive a higher attach rate than the rest of our customers on balance. They do a very good job with that. But to a percentage and to try to put that in some kind of a framework for you, we just don't have that information.
Right, but you know what the growth rate of the Invisible Shield sales are year over year to Best Buy, correct?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we were basically flat in the quarter year over year at Best Buy in the sales of Invisible Shield.
Okay, and that's I guess you're flat even though you had more SKUs with regards to Invisible Shield on the large form factors like the iPad and the Amazon Fire and things like that. So I guess one could assume that perhaps the attach rates on the small form factor, meaning the cell phones, really the Samsung and the iPad or the iPhone, were down. Is that a safe assumption?
I think what really drives that is the fact that we didn't have a new device launched at Best Buy. You know, there's no new iPad like we saw last year in that first quarter, and I think that's really what is driving at this.
Okay, and then just a quick question on the HCO. Do you have any idea on what the value has been bantered around with regards to the raise? Obviously, you passed on it, so you must kind of know what the value is. If just a sense, that would be helpful.
It's an up round, but we can't disclose that. That was in the documents. They don't want that information out there. So we can say it was an up round from the last rounds that were raised with HCO.
Okay, great. And with regards to that, I'm just going to talk a little bit more about gross margins. You know, you have the $1 million charge, and I know that the mix was certainly still moving against you, but still you had a pretty big percentage of Invisible Shield. So was there some degradation in the margin of Invisible Shield?
No, we haven't had any pricing pressure related to the Invisible Shield. So it really was a function of the mix. I mean, that was substantial. I mean, in my comments, I talked about we went from 19% to 35% on keyboards with inherently a lower gross margin contribution. That coupled with without the new device, typically when there's a new device launched, we have a really strong load-in order of Invisible Shield product, which is very accretive to our gross margin. So the mix is the biggest issue there, but there hasn't been any pricing pressure.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Operator, can we ask the next call, please? Can we ask the next question, please? Hello.
I think it was Dennis. Is it our phone? Can we dial in?
Yeah.
Is it our phone?
Got it. Thank you for your patience. Our next question comes from John Hickman of Ladenburg. Your line is open.
Brandon?
Yes.
You can hear me? Okay. Can you talk a little bit about your operating expenses for the year? Last year they were like $75 million. What kind of growth rate would you expect on that going forward here?
Well, we've modeled our operating expenses out still pretty flat with last year. Not a lot of increase on operating expenses, John. So we are planning to get leverage out of that as we grow the top line. We still think we'll get some leverage there. We've got a fairly fixed model in place, and so there's not a lot of variable costs, and so it should be fairly consistent.
Okay. So you think pretty flat going forward. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to also ask you about the buyback program. You said you had $4 million left. So were you going to continue to do that through the next quarter or so until that's gone?
Yeah, so we do have $4 million that's authorized. We will, you know, be opportunistic on those repurchases, work closely with our board to, you know, authorize the next tranche to go out and purchase that. So, you know, we're going to kind of see how the, you know, how the market plays out and then consult with the board and execute as we, you know, see fit.
Okay, my last question is on your operating expense line or your interest expense line. I had that number at about twice what it came in at, around $500,000 instead of $225,000. Going forward, was there some anomaly there, or is that going to be your expense going forward?
Yeah, there wasn't. I mean, we did refinance that debt last year, and the effective rate we've been paying for the quarter was about 1.65%. And so, you know, that's, you know, obviously it's based off of LIBOR, so it has the possibility to move. But as I, you know, spoke in my remarks, we did pay down on the line of credit on April 1st. We did make a payment against the term loan. So, you know, barring any, you know, drastic changes in LIBOR, I think that would be indicative of what we would expect.
Okay. And your expectations for cash flow positive operations for the remainder of the year?
For the year, like last year, it can get lumpy from quarter to quarter depending on the schedule we have for new product launches. You know, as Randy alluded to, we're looking to launch the Caliber Advantage the latter part of next quarter. So the second quarter typically is the quarter, if we are a net user of cash, that would come through. So it really depends on the timing of those. But for the entire year, definitely we will be generating some strong cash flow.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Paul Coster of J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. The first one is on gross margins. Randy, you talked about, I think, the gross margins going to mid to low 40s this year. Is that immediately, or is that for the full year, or can you sort of shape how the recovery takes place?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. That's a full year estimate.
That includes the margins in this first quarter?
It does, uh-huh.
Okay, and there's a lot of inventory from a seasonal perspective. Usually it dips in the first quarter, doesn't it? But it hasn't this year. So what's in inventory, and is it atypical, or is it something to do with product launch?
But it does have to do with product launches, the timing of when we're getting our keyboards in. We have made the transition to try and get more product on the ocean, so we're getting bigger shipments as they come in to stage for our customers. We look closely at those inventory levels, and if we identify, you know, problem SKUs, slow-moving SKUs, then we'll reserve against those. That has been our normal course of business for, you know, the last few years, and so we'll continue to do that. I'm not concerned with the levels of inventory that we have right now, Paul. I think we're in a good spot.
The guidance that you're issuing for the year, Randy, does it include the gaming controllers, or is that kind of upside?
Yeah, it's still primarily upside, Paul. The gaming controller, we're probably more encouraged by our progress at this point in time than we have been. It's a very complicated launch, bringing the software companies together with the retailers and all coming together for this launch. You know, it's kind of a chicken and egg scenario. The software title companies want retail distribution. The retailers want all the great titles. And so we're orchestrating all of that to come together for the launch. And it's complicated, but we've got a good head of steam right now. And like I mentioned during my remarks, we've got 28 titles already committed for our launch at the end of June. And then we'll continue to build that title library as we move to a retail launch in the third quarter. So
okay,
more directly to your question, there's a little bit of that built in, but not a lot.
The change to the year was, it sort of feels like it's really happened quite recently. And I realize this is the first time you've been through year-end and the seasonal period as CEO, so obviously that counts for something here. But it does sound like this is really recent, this discovery of the sort of poor execution of the change in the channel management. Can you just sort of talk to us about when you discovered this and what do you think went wrong in terms of kind of capturing this earlier?
Yeah, and you're not wrong in that it did surface fairly late. We got through January. January looked like it was down just a little bit, but nothing significant. And then we didn't have visibility into February until mid-March. So it was really after mid-March when we had a glance at February results, and then March came in challenging also, that we had to really start looking deeply into what was going on and what was causing the shortfall. And as we looked back into this distribution handoff, you know, the good news is the goal was to get our pricing management through the channels corrected, and we're well on our way there. In fact, several of our customers have commented that that change has taken place rather quickly. The challenge is that the new distribution onboarding process has taken longer. They're very large companies relative to the distributors that we've had in our product lines, and so it's taken longer to educate the sales force, longer to get them going, and longer for us to get them up to speed the way they need to be.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you once again, ladies and gentlemen. To ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. Again, press star 1 at this time to ask a question. Our next question comes from Mike Lattimore of Northland Securities. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Ryan McDonald on for Mike Lattimore. First couple questions is surrounding iFrogs. Could you provide a percentage of revenue that iFrogs contributed? I know you talked about consolidating the two, so I'm not sure if you still give that. And then also, if you could provide a little bit more color or detail around, you talked about some sales opportunities missed, particularly with iFrogs. I mean, can you quantify at all how much that took out of the quarter in revenue?
Yeah, let me back up, Ryan, the first part of your question. We have forecast iFrogs on a total annual basis to represent anywhere between 25 and 30% of our total revenue. And we see that brand gaining some strength, certainly from the first quarter on out. We've got some great products going into that brand this year with our Caliber Gaming products, as well as the Animatones line for children, which is growing. And the themes that we saw happen in the first quarter were in the personal audio portion of our iFrog sales. We lost a couple of pegs at some key retailers. We also gained a couple of key pegs at some key retailers that will come on a little bit later in the year and offset some of that. But that personal audio category is a very challenging one. It's very trend-driven. And one that moves very quickly. So we're constantly reinventing ourselves, and we're just in one of those cycles where we gave up some SKUs, picked up some SKUs that come on later in the season.
And then surrounding the gaming launch, you mentioned that the retail launch will be sometime in third quarter. How many retailers is that planned for?
We haven't disclosed any of that because we've been working confidentially with all of them, but if you look out through the landscape of who currently is in the gaming business in one way or another, whether it's software titles or controllers, et cetera, you can be assured that we've talked to all of them, and the reception has been very positive.
Okay, and then just a final question. So what do you feel is would be for second quarter here the key drivers for that revenue? I mean, are you expecting material revenues from the online launch of the gaming at all?
I think that will build in time. I wouldn't call it material. It's really more about messaging when we launch online, letting the gaming community know that it's out there, recruiting some of the early adopters, get some buzz started around the product, but really just send the message that we are in the gaming business. We've got these titles moving forward. You can watch for this in retail in the third quarter, and it's kind of our coming out party. So it will serve more as a platform to introduce that we're in the gaming environment now.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Our next question comes from Dave King of the Roth Capital Partners. Your question, please.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for the follow-up. I guess just as you think about the as you kind of laid out your guidance for the remainder of the year, or for the year, it kind of implies high single-digit growth if you back into it for the final three quarters. I guess as you think about that and what's incorporated into that, it sounds like you've got new distribution that should come on to kind of offset some of the poorer price distribution that you had before. It sounds like that's larger. It also sounds like there's the keyboards and then also Invisible Shield Extreme revamp, some of that kind of stuff. It sounds like some stuff from iFrogs, from some of the changes you've made there, and then also just from the cyclical nature of it, as you described, Randy. But then also just, you know, device launches. As you think about those things, what do you think is going to be the primary driver of where that revenue growth comes from? Is it really tied most to the device launches, or is it some of this, and those other things are just lesser in importance, or is it all of the above? Just help me out.
Yeah. If you go back to some comments we made a couple months ago in our last call, we talked about the drivers being based on three things. We said 50 to 60% of our revenue growth would come from SKU expansion at existing retailers that we're doing business with. We still feel very good about that, and you'll see that happen more definitively as we move through the year. But we also said that 20 to 25% of our growth would come from entirely new retail relationships, and those are advancing, albeit a little more slowly than we had also anticipated, and then 20 to 25% of our growth from new products. And we feel very confident with that number. We don't release these numbers other than kind of a range, but I can tell you that our new product revenue outpaced our projections so far year to date.
Okay, so then is it fair to say then that really where the kind of shortfall then fell in the first quarter was on just the fact that there was nothing in terms of a new device launch?
Yes, in part because we did build a little bit in the first quarter of last year for the iPad 3 launch, and even though it launched in April, early April, we were shipping product in the end of the first quarter last year. But the real challenge was, as we've talked about, the fall off in the iFrogs audio and the slower onboarding process of our new distributors combining to keep us from performing where we wanted to.
Okay. And then you expect those things to generally be resolved as we look forward to the balance of the year.
We do. That the distribution relationships will strengthen. Those teams will become more familiar with the products. And the iFrogs, as we mentioned, has picked up some pretty significant SKUs where we lost some in the first quarter. So.
Okay. And then in terms of device launches, are there any that you see out there that should be bigger beneficiaries, you know, provide a bigger benefit than others, you know, upcoming?
I think definitely our landmark launch this year is going to be the Calibre Gaming product line. Although, you know, I talked a little bit, too, about our next generation of keyboards. They are just fantastic. We're anxious to get those into retail. We've had several retailers that have seen the product and have already committed to it, and we believe those will be nice drivers for us through the balance of the year. And then we've got, as we talked about in an earlier call, an entry into power management that will come late in the year that we're also having some hope for.
Yeah, sorry. I meant more in terms of device launches from, you know, whether it be Samsung or anything out there that you see coming in terms of the market that could drive it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed that. Well, you know, Apple announced last week that they're pushing all of their device launches late into the year, and unfortunately that's a significant hit to us. We've been the beneficiary of two or three consistent launches for the last 3 years spread out during the year, and those have provided great lift for us. So without that, that's a bit of a challenge to recover from not having those. You know, the Samsung Galaxy 4 launched recently, and we had some nice sell-in in the month of April for that, but to date, nobody has had the kind of device launches that has spiked demand for our products the way that Apple has.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to CEO Randall Hells for any closing remarks. Sir?
Yeah, thank you. We just want to thank everybody that joined us for the call today and for your continued support of Zag. And we will continue to do what we need to do and become better operators and drive these new products through channels and bring our distributors up to levels of performance that get us back on track. So, again, thank you for your interest, and we'll talk to you in July.
Thank you, Mr. Hales, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your participation. That does conclude Zag Incorporated's first quarter earnings conference call. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Have a great day.